Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's begin with African boxing. Ghana's Isaac Dogbe goes after the WBO Super Bantamweight title Saturday night when he fights American Jesse Magdaleno in the eastern U.S. city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's a matchup of unbeaten prize fighters. The champion Magdaleno has won all 25 of his professional bouts with 18 knockouts. This will be his second world title defense. And Dogbe is 18-0 with 12 knockouts. Dogbe's trainer is his father, Paul, who's predicting a knockout victory for his son.
Isaac is ready. Come 28th of April, you're going to see a different beast altogether. You know, Isaac, I know for sure he's going to knock Magdaleno out. We want to tell Ghanaians that we thank them for supporting us. We will not let you guys down. And we'll bring the title home.
Elsewhere in pro boxing, American Keith Thurman is giving up his WBC welterweight title, as we hear now from our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta.
Keith has been dealing with injuries, and since the last fight with Danny Garcia, he's not been in the ring, and you cannot hold the belt ransom. There are people that want to fight for the belt. So the WBC have just decided that, dude, vacate the belt. Danny Garcia against Sean Porter will fight for the vacant belt. Then if you come back, you're healed, then you fight the winner. But he still has his WBA belt, so we'll look at him coming back in the ring in the summer.
Your thoughts on Keith Thurman, Namdi, as a fighter?
Not a bad fighter. He's undefeated. And mind you, he's fought some of the best in that division. He's one of the superstars in the welterweight division.
Amir Khan recently returned to the ring. How about an update on him, Namdi?
Don't joke with Amir Khan. We make all the jokes about Amir Khan, about his glass chain and all that stuff, but he brings people into the arena. He fought Phil LoGreco in the UK, and he bombed him in 39 seconds, Sonny. Knocked him out in 39 seconds. So Amir Khan is back. He has speed. He'll make anybody look stupid. He's staying in the welterweight division with the 147 division with the big, big names. His challenger right now, he's challenging Adrian Broner. He wants all the big names in that division, and he will get it. He just decides to fight in the UK. And look, in the UK right now, Sonny, they're drawing huge, huge numbers. We're talking about 18, 20,000 to see a fight, and Amir Khan is a star.
What do you think about Khan Broner?
Khan Broner is a good fight. Adrian Broner, don't count him out. He just had a great fight with Jesse Vargas. That is a good fight that will sell out any arena in the UK. And, you know, Broner will come with all the trash talk and hype the fight and make you want to run out of your house and go to the arena. Amir Khan is also a trash talker. So these two trash talkers, they will sell out an arena. And I think if I'm Broner's people, I will go for that fight because it's a good chance he will catch Khan. But if you cannot catch Khan, you'll be chasing Khan all night, then you're not going to get a good fight. It can end up becoming a boring fight.
Thanks, Namdi. That's our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moueta. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Now let's go to Manchester, England, where former world heavyweight boxing champion Tyson Fury says he'll have a comeback fight June 9th, after more than 2.5 years out of the ring.
The fire is back now. And it took over 2.5 years to get that fire back. I didn't think it was coming, I was waiting. And every time I went to the pub and had 10 pints of beer, I thought, yeah, I want to fight tonight. But in hindsight, I needed to get out of that environment, get away from it all, and then get my head back in gear and get focused. And I almost didn't make it to the training camp. There was about 5 or 6 times along the road to Spain, to Marbella, me and Ben. I almost turned around 4 or 5 times. I was making excuses why I shouldn't go. I thought I'd just call off to Disneyland instead. Paris, but that didn't work, and we kept going, and Ben said, if I can only get him to Marbella, we've done it. And we ended up getting there in the end, Ben, didn't we? And the Mac is back. You know, I can't say how delighted I am to be here, finally back in shape, finally set a date, because I was talking about it for a while, but everyone thought it was hot air, said I'd never get back. And it was really Deontay Wilder who spurred me on and gave me the ambition to return, because he said I couldn't do it. He said, definitely not Tyson Fury's done. And I was walking along the canal with my dog at the time. And I thought, you know what, I'm a fat pig. Look at the state of me. Felt like jumping in the water and drowning. And I thought, I'm going to turn this around and I'm going to come back and I'm going to knock him out.
Tyson Fury says he'll have a couple of warm-up fights and then he'll be ready to take on world champions Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder.
I don't fear any of them. They're all very good fighters and good champions, but I believe that with my talent and skill and confidence alone is enough to beat these fellas. I believe I could tie one arm behind my back and beat AJ and beat Wilder as well, and pick either one they want, left or right, to go behind the back. And that's how confident I am in my own ability.
That's former world heavyweight boxing champion Tyson Fury officially announcing his comeback fight on June 9th in Manchester, England. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now with a package of African sports news is reporter Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin with athletics, where the International Association of Athletics Federation, IAAF's decision to approve new eligibility regulations for female classification will affect South Africa's golden girl, Caster Semenya. The move has been met with outrage in South Africa. From November the 1st, the IAAF will limit entry for all international events from 400 meters through the mile to women with testosterone levels below a specified level. For Caster Semenya, she will have to take medication to reduce her testosterone level if she hopes to continue running in events from the 400 meters to the mile. World half marathon record holder Jocelyn Jepkosgei completed a distance double after earning the 10,000 meters title at the Kenya Army Athletics Championship at the Moi Stadium, Kasarani, on Thursday. And now to basketball news. The Nigerian Basketball Federation has decided to formulate a new league format for the lower divisions to maximize the potentials of grassroots basketball in the country. Musa Kida, the Nigerian Basketball Federation president, said the National Division 2 team will comprise 74 teams, two from each of the 36 states of Nigeria, while the Division 1 league will feature the Atlantic and Savannah conferences, which will comprise about 6 to 8 teams each.
These are basically clubs, meaning that you can have a 16-year-old kid playing or a 42-year-old playing on the same team. This is more to allow people to come in clusters of communities to form clubs and also seek to compete in higher divisions. So right now our interest is actually to awaken them, make them aware that they can express themselves at that level, grassroots level, and for them to participate. And then after, we'll see what kind of value we can draw from it.
In rugby news, South African national rugby coach Rassie Erasmus is happy with the way the three alignments of the Springbok camps have gone to accelerate preparations for the forthcoming international rugby season. Rassie Erasmus is confident and positive about the season ahead, but will cast his net wide to find a captain if Warren Whitney or Eben Etzebeth aren't fit for the June international window.
I really think the benefits of having smaller groups there and talking more detailed, where if you have one camp with all the players, all franchises there, it's sometimes difficult to share all the knowledge and find the detail of the different game plans. So yes, I think goal achieved there.
In football news, Zamalek claimed their first win in 11 years over arch rivals Ahly in the Egyptian domestic league, securing a 2-1 victory in the Cairo Derby on Thursday, ending an otherwise disastrous season, happily, which saw the club battle for third place. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and I hope you have a sporty weekend. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. At first glance, the heady world of psychology and the very physical world of competitive sports might appear to have nothing to do with each other. But look again. Most athletes know that mental attitude can make all the difference between a dazzling performance and a mediocre one, between winning and losing. My VOA colleague, Adam Phillips, spoke with sports psychologist Leah Legos in New York City. Dr. Legos works with athletes of all ages and abilities who want to be at the top of their game, both on the court and field, and in the mind. Dr. Legos begins her conversation with Adam by explaining how sports and psychology go together.
They're intricately intertwined, and we think of performance and ways to optimize performance, goal setting, visualization, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole host of behaviors, how you think in terms of times of adversity, how you manage stress, a set of health behaviors from sleeping to eating to making time for relaxation and recovery that absolutely impact our ability to perform at our peak.
Is it about performance mostly with your clients, or is it also about the psychology that they bring to their lives so that they feel good?
Both. The psychology they bring to their lives and their mental approach is a huge part of their ability to operate at their peaks, specifically under pressure moments. And I believe that training the mind and the body simultaneously is the most effective way to increase performance. So I actually operate from a sports psychophysiology perspective, where we train the mind and the body, specifically things like heart rhythms, galvanic skin response, brain waves, how to respond to stress from a physiological standpoint to optimize performance as well.
The stress is a big part of it. Is there sort of some of these deeper psychological aspects as well? I mean, you talk about people's upbringing and that kind of thing?
Absolutely. But we're not doing kind of couch psychoanalytic therapy. It's just not, it's not the discipline that most of the athletes want to come in here for. And it's a type of therapy that's beautiful, but it's not necessarily as short term as they need. So we work more from a cognitive behavioral approach, mindfulness, and also a physiological approach, integrating things like biofeedback and neurofeedback. To help them learn to control their mind and employ those mental techniques that we work on together.
What's an example of a mental technique?
Reframing. So, for instance, I had a woman who had just made the world championships for running, and she just wasn't feeling the fire, and she didn't understand where it had gone. And we talked about she had gone through a tremendous amount of training and pressure to even make the world championships. And she was ranked one of the top three in the world in terms of placement and anticipation for the world championship games. And that part of the fire was a little bit of burnout. So we did some reframing. We brought her back to her five-year-old self the first time she ran. And someone said, gosh, you have such talent. And how her heart lit up and how she just wanted to run forever and ever. And we brought the five-year-old self back and talked about that physiological experience so she could draw upon that during her race day. We moved it from a cognitive place to a physiological. So we brought it up cognitively, but then I had her describe the physiological components of that experience so that she could essentially biohack the experience so that she didn't have to go through a lot of cognitive self-talk, but she could just feel the emotion and go there for her performance.
I can imagine that athletes are ideally suited to look at things or to experience things through the physiological mode because they're physical.
Yes, and we can capture it. So by integrating the physiological piece of this, it's not so nebulous. You know, sports psychology is great, but goal setting can be in some ways a little bit less tangible than if we talk about physiological experiences, recreate them, and then I show them how their heart rate reacts and how they increase recovery. And so it's interesting metrics to pair together.
You work with all kinds of people, not just Olympic athletes, right? Give me an idea of the range of the people who walk into this beautiful office.
You know, we help people from all over the world, believe it or not. I have some clients from India, some clients from London, some clients from Singapore, lots of clients from New York City. Competitors of all types and performers as well. So 6-year-old golfers, people on coaching in the NBA and NFL, to people that are serious equestrians that ride horses all over the world and just feel really passionate about their sport.
Tell me about the six-year-old.
Yeah, this six-year-old had tremendous talent on the golf course, but he didn't know how to control his nerves. And to be honest, a lot of 35-year-olds don't either. This six-year-old was really talented. He had the cognitive ability of someone much older. And we worked on essentially helping him gain control over his response to stress, both mental, some of the things he was saying to himself, his self-talk improved. We changed how his heart responded through a modality called heart rate variability biofeedback. So he wasn't having that pervasive, anxious feeling, that jitteriness all over his body. And he came in about the eighth session, and this little guy had a business plan. He wanted all his friends, all his six-year-olds, to have acquire these skills because he felt it had been so valuable for him. And he was able to simply close the gap between how he was performing in his practice and his competition. There was a big gap. He would have these great scores in practice that had coaches paying lots of attention to him. But can you imagine the pressure of a six-year-old? And so he would go to competition, and you wouldn't see that same level of talent. It was like a different kid. And being able to control his mental as well as physiological response to stress enabled him to perform at his peak. And as you can imagine, you know, allowed him to be the person he was meant to be.
Something that's so interesting is I could see why psychology and sport would go together so well, because sport participates in levels of the mind and the heart and the emotion and the body that are ubiquitous. They're universal in a sense. I mean, sport is almost an afterthought in terms of the developmental abilities and the values that that the games espouse or participate in.
Absolutely. And I see a lot of adults, too, outside of athletics, business, performers, Broadway. But when I see kids embrace and love these skills and start talking about how they can apply it to other aspects of their life, it's some of the most satisfying work.
Go team.
Go team.
Go team. That's Dr. Leah Legos, a sports psychologist in New York City. And she was talking with my VOA colleague, Adam Phillips, in her Manhattan office. And stay tuned for more segments from Adam on sports psychology in the days to come. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We just heard Dr. Legos say how that female athlete she worked with just wasn't feeling the fire, and she didn't understand where the fire went. And that reminded me of what former world heavyweight boxing champion Tyson Fury said earlier in the show.
The fire is back now, and it took over 2.5 years to get that fire back.
Tyson Fury says the fire is back, and so is his sense of humor. Tyson cracked jokes and verbally sparred with the assembled media at that news conference in Manchester, England.
They say I'm the Duracell bunny. I think I'm even tougher than that. I can go longer. 30 seconds, flash.
29-year-old Tyson Fury hasn't fought since he beat Vladimir Klitschko in November 2015 in a stunning upset to win the WBA, IBF, and WBO world heavyweight titles. Those three belts are now held by Anthony Joshua. We'll have to wait and see if AJ eventually fights Tyson Fury. But I, for one, welcome Tyson Fury back to the big boy division. With his loose lips and trash talk, things won't be boring with Tyson Fury around. I think it's safe to say that Tyson will bring the fire and the fury to the heavyweight division. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. An update now on the National Basketball Association playoffs. First-round action continues later Friday night with three games. Here in Washington, my beloved Washington Wizards will host the top-seeded Toronto Raptors. It's a must-win situation for the Wizards. They trail this best-of-seven series 3-2. In Indianapolis, Indiana, the Indiana Pacers are at home against LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, for this game, it's must-win for the Pacers. They trail the Cavs 3-2. LeBron hit a three-pointer at the buzzer in Game 5 to lift the Cavaliers to a 98-95 victory. Now, LeBron made that big shot after he blocked a shot by Indiana's Victor Oladipo in the closing seconds. The NBA said on Thursday that LeBron's big block should have been called goaltending. In a statement, the league said video shows LeBron blocked Oladipo's shot after it makes contact with the backboard. Under NBA rules, the play could not be reviewed because it wasn't called on the floor. The Pacers did not contest the block while on the floor, but later in the locker room, they complained about the non-call by the referees. And one more must-win playoff game on Friday night. It's must-win for the Oklahoma City Thunder in Salt Lake City, Utah. The Thunder trail the Utah Jazz 3-2. In NBA playoff action Thursday night, well, the Milwaukee Bucks were faced with a must-win situation, and they got that win. They delivered a 97-86 victory over the Boston Celtics. That series is now tied at 3-each, and it means there will be a decisive Game 7 on Saturday night in Boston, Massachusetts. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Milwaukee's young all-star, delivered 31 points and 14 rebounds in Game 6. The winner of the Milwaukee-Boston series will play the Philadelphia 76ers in the second round of the NBA playoffs. More NBA playoff news. Two-time league most valuable player Stephen Curry resumed full practice with the Golden State Warriors on Thursday. Curry looked strong as he practiced wearing a protective brace over his sprained left knee, which has sidelined him since March 23rd. Now, Steph could play for the defending champion Warriors on Saturday in Game 1 of their second-round playoff series against the New Orleans Pelicans. Golden State's head coach, Steve Kerr, says Curry is questionable for Saturday's game, but his status could change after one more day of full practice. Turning to tennis, Spanish star Rafael Nadal is moving closer to an 11th Barcelona title in his home country. Rafa scored a 6-love, 7-5 victory Friday over Slovakian qualifier Martin Klizan to advance to the semifinals. Now, Klizan had scored a pretty big upset in the second round earlier in this Spanish tournament. He defeated Serbian star Novak Djokovic on his way to getting to that match with Rafa. Djokovic just struggling right now on the men's tour. But Rafa Nadal moving closer to an 11th Barcelona title in Spain. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. And that wraps up the April 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
United Nations peacekeeping missions are far more complicated today than when the peacekeeper's job consisted primarily of keeping the warring parties apart. Today's multidimensional peacekeeping operations are called upon not only to maintain peace and security, but also to facilitate the political process, protect civilians, assist in the disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration of former combatants, support the organization of elections, protect and promote human rights, and assist in restoring the rule of law. It is also dangerous work. According to the United Nations last year, 56 of their peacekeepers died as a result of violence. So it makes sense to prepare peacekeepers prior to deployment for the kinds of challenges they will face in real-world peacekeeping operations. In late February and early March, over 1,000 peacekeepers from more than 30 countries took part in Shanti Dut 4. Shanti Dut, which means Ambassador of Peace, is a multinational United Nations peacekeeping exercise designed to familiarize the participants with situations they may encounter during deployment on peacekeeping operations. The exercise took place at the Bangladesh Institute of Peace Support Operation Training, with support from the Global Peace Operations Initiative, a peacekeeping capacity-building program managed by the U.S. Department of State, in partnership with the Department of Defense. The training participants at Shanti Dut 4 had the opportunity to learn from numerous international instructors with extensive real-world peacekeeping experience. The multinational exercises and training sessions provided the opportunity for an exchange of knowledge, skills, and techniques between subject matter experts and international instructors for the benefit of all involved. U.S. Pacific Command and the United States State Department Global Peace Operations Initiative are pleased, indeed honored, to partner with our friends in Bangladesh in support of the training of multinational military forces to conduct real-world United Nations peacekeeping operations, said U.S. Air Force Major General James O. Eifert. Exercise Shanti Dut 4 is one way we continue to enrich the relationship while simultaneously strengthening multinational partnerships around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, peepas. This is Heather Maxwell. Coming up on Music Time in Africa, I've got amazing music for you. From Cameroon, Mali, Zambia, Reunion, Nigeria, and Zimbabwe, Ghana's vote on most popular song of the year for 2017, hint, hint, Zongo. Interview and live music session with Kenyan guitar masters John Nzeze and Peter Akwabi.
Angelique means it is Angelina, but Angelina, I just twisted the name to call it Angelique.
Join me this Friday and Saturday at 1505 and 20500 UTC. Music time in Africa. Yeah, babies.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Jim Kessler of Third Way and John Fortier from the Bipartisan Policy Center join host Carol Castiel to talk about the current U.S. political landscape on the next edition of VOA's Encounter. Among the topics to be discussed will be the results of this week's special election in Arizona, which was seen as a bellwether for the upcoming midterms, as well as the ongoing Mueller probe. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.